The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
Coming up on Colombia Calling with me, your host Richard McCall, here in Mompox, Colombia. This week we have a very special guest in the form of Nicholas Gill, a freelance writer for the New York Times, guidebook writer and a traveler extraordinaire. He visits us here in Mompox and talks to us about Colombia, about the food, about lifestyles and about writing. We are striving for editorial quality here at Colombia Calling, and we'll dissect the news, tell you what's going on, inform you about those topics not dealt with in the international press. So don't miss it. Colombia Calling, 2 p.m. Colombia time on Mondays, 3 p.m. Eastern time, with me, your host, Richard McCall.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, your online radio resource about life abroad.
The U.S. government has spoken. It wants higher tax rates, capital controls to keep your money under their control, surveillance to spy on your every email. In short, the government wants to control every aspect of your life and make you their slave. As an internationally minded person, you know keeping everything you own in one country could be disastrous. But how do you get started? Announcing Passport to Freedom. In just 3 days, you'll learn how to escape high taxes and reduce or eliminate your tax burden. How to form an offshore corporation or trust. The best places to get a second passport. The best places to expatriate and more. This 3-day event will reveal everything you need to know about keeping yourself and your assets safe. Tickets to this event in fabulous Las Vegas are extremely limited, so go to PassportOverseas.com. That's PassportOverseas.com. Seats are extremely limited, so register today and take advantage of a special 50% discount for overseas radio listeners. Don't miss this chance to see offshore and expat experts like Joel Nagel, Bobby Casey, Jake DeSillis, Pete Sisko, Andrew Henderson, and more. Go to OverseasPassport.com now and reserve your ticket before the government shuts this opportunity down.
From China's Great Wall to the Leaning Tower of Pisa, this is the Overseas Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Monday, October the 30th, and you're listening to Colombia Calling with your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompox, Colombia. Later on the show, we'll be interviewing Nicholas Gill, a freelance writer for the New York Times, New Yorker magazine, and other excellent publications. Most recently as well, he's written a guidebook on Honduras. Nick has graced us here with his presence in Mompox. He's been wanting to come to Mompox for a while anyway, so he's down here checking it out, and we'll be talking to him later in the show all about his travels, what he does, food in Colombia, because that's one of his key topics. Check out his website, The New World Review, because on there you'll see a whole host of ideas for where to eat, what to do. And if you just want to see his photography and journalism, check out nicholas-gill.com. Anyway, so we're here, Mompox, Colombia, soporific heat. What's going on in Colombia? Well, Thursday, 3rd of October, the dialogues will once again commence between the FARC and the government in La Habana, in Havana, Cuba. The press, or people in the government, have dubbed these peace talks or dialogues as Operación Tortuga because of the snail's pace at which they are proceeding. But things must be remembered, and people need to be reminded that peace dialogues and peace accords do not come about overnight. And we've been in a conflict for 50 years. This is not going to happen by November next year, before the presidential elections. And if it does happen, I don't feel that any of the criteria, the 5 points on the agenda, will have been met with a satisfactory result. So we call, Colombia Calling is asking and giving a shout out that people be patient and that each of the points on the 5-point agenda is addressed with utmost infinitesimal details. You know, we need to iron out everything and stop the armed conflict between the FARC and the government that has been tearing this country apart. So anyway, we got that on Thursday, the 3rd of October. What else have we got? The American, who I mentioned some months ago on this show, Kevin Scott Sute, an ex-Marine who just basically just, you know, armed with a machete and a compass and his iPad, decided to hike off into the jungle from in Guaviare, a region known for its guerrilla activity, a region known for being insecure, a region known for coca growing. Anyway, the guy hiked off into the jungle and not far from El Retorno, that's between Guaviare and, well, it's between San Jose and El Retorno, where he was hiking. He was then, you know, taken hostage by the FARC guerrillas. I mean, it was everybody knew it was going to happen, and he was advised not to do it. And everybody pleaded with him. Even the police pleaded with him. You know, they tried to reason with him, and he said, "No, I've got the skills and the know-how how to do this." So he hiked off over there. And anyway, I wrote a blog about this, which got quite a lot of hate mail for it, because I called some travelers to Colombia plain stupid. But really, if you're being warned by everyone, then surely you should, you know, heed this advice. Anyway, so interesting enough, the FARC have called upon Jesse Jackson to help in the release of Kevin Scott. So maybe we'll see images of Jesse Jackson out there in the Guaviare jungles helping release Kevin Scott, the ex-Marine. So that's always interesting. And of course, that will hit the headlines, and Colombia will be in the headlines for all the wrong reasons again. But then, you know, Kevin Scott has a great deal to answer for regarding that. We hope that he comes out safely, securely, soundly, but we kind of wish he'd never done what he had done. Anyway, so what else we have? Alvaro Mutis, the great Colombian author, passed away last week as well. Very sad, a great loss to the literary landscape here in Colombia. He's not as well known as Gabriel Garcia Marquez, but, you know, a very special author. I've been living for many, many years in Mexico. So actually, perhaps a bit more Mexican than Colombian. But anyway, Alvaro Mutis, check out his works, especially the ones with Macrol in them. Yeah, it's very interesting writing. What else can we say? Well, regarding Mompos, because I'm here in Mompos, and everything's working towards the Jazz Festival this weekend. That's on October 4th and 5th. There are no rooms left in Mompos, if you're thinking of coming. The Jazz Festival, it's a jazz festival in name. This is the town's second ever jazz festival. We had one last year, this time last year, and it was a great success. So this one's even bigger, and we've got the Tennessee Big Band, the University of Tennessee Big Band, opening the show in the Plaza de la Concepción, so in front of the newly restored plaza, and it will be phenomenal. I mean, can you just imagine? Last year we had a blues band from New Orleans playing the cemetery, which was very, very atmospheric. Anyway, so we've got the Tennessee University Big Band Troubadours playing. There'll be other jazz artists. There'll be workshops, you know, trying to, you know, make people aware of what jazz is. And fortunately, for once in Mompos, the vallenato will be turned off. We don't have to listen to the accordion-heavy pop music from the coast. We can listen to jazz. And I can't think of anywhere better than in Mompos to listen to the sort of Miles Davis's sketches of Spain. I mean, Mompos is an Andalus village in the New World, so it's befitting. And the sort of claustrophobic nature of Mompos in the humidity lends itself to jazz. So anyway, the Jazz Festival, book for next year, because we're all booked up this year, and my little place was booked up from January. And so that's very, very exciting. And, well, that's really much about it. And the only other piece of news that won't obviously hit the headlines in any other country is that Jorge Noguera, who was the head of the DAS, that's now Migración Colombia, because DAS is now defunct, Jorge Noguera is going on trial next week for his sting operation on tapping phone calls. And he was in charge of all of this information from 2002 through 2006. I had the opportunity to sit next to him once in a press conference, but he's not the nicest man. So we'll see what happens when all of this comes out and the trial begins. But of course, it's heavily linked to former President Álvaro Uribe. So it may not be complete chance that this case is coming up now. It's in particular as Álvaro Uribe is launching his Senate bid and putting together his party, the Democratic Party or something or other, trying to run for president. Not him, but putting some sort of puppet in charge. So we'll see what's happening there. Very interesting times in Colombia, as always. Now, when we come back, we'll be talking to Nicholas Gill, freelance writer for the New York Times. And you're listening to Colombia Calling. My name is Rich McConnell. Don't go away.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
It is said that liberty is the only thing you cannot have unless you are willing to give it to others. Do you believe in and want to spread the message of liberty to a younger generation around the world? The Language of Liberty Institute does just that, with camps in developing countries such as Albania, Nigeria, Armenia, and Mozambique. If you want to learn more about this powerful and growing initiative to sponsor, attend, or even become one of the teachers, visit our website at languageofliberty.org to learn more. You can subscribe to email updates or like our Facebook page to follow our activities.
Are you looking to invest, live, or retire overseas? Before you pack your bags, you need to log on to NagelLaw.com. It's the only stop you need to make for global business, asset protection, estate planning, overseas residency, and citizenship needs. Our experts have experience working in 41 countries around the world. Starting a business abroad can be overwhelming without expert help. We assist clients with foreign trust, foundations, corporations, LLCs, IBCs, and property acquisition. Need help with IRA assets abroad, capital formation, foreign securities issues, banking, brokerage, or finance needs? NagelLaw.com. We ensure compliance with U.S. tax and regulatory laws. We engineer global structures to help our clients achieve their personal business objectives. Get started today. To find out about our introductory personal asset protection plan, visit us online, NagelLaw.com. We represent capital overseas.
This tree was never chopped down because this crutch never needed to be carved. Because these legs never grew weak. Because this child never got polio. Over the past 20 years, Rotary Club members have helped immunize over 2 billion children against polio. Now we are on the brink of eradicating this crippling disease once and for all. But we need your help. Thanks to an historic matching grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, every dollar Rotary raises will work twice as hard to make sure vaccines reach the people who need it, to protect the children of the world against polio forever. This is an opportunity to end polio now. Visit rotary.org/endpolio. Rotary, humanity in motion.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
And we're back. This is segment two, Colombia Calling, with your host, Richard McColl, here on the Overseas Radio Network. I'm here this week with a very special guest, Nicholas Gill, a travel journalist, well, journalist in general from New York, who is the author of the New World Review, specializing in travel, food, and all sorts of things. We're very honored to have him here. And actually, he's here in Mompos, Colombia, with me today, sweating. Welcome, Nicholas.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome, Nicholas. Now, what brings you to Mompos, Colombia?
Well, I've wanted to come here for years. I mean, at first, I didn't think it was an actual place. And then I heard you were building a hotel here. And it's been piquing my curiosity for years. So I'm happy that I finally made it.
Oh, it's fantastic that you got down here. You braved the 4:30 a.m. departure from Cartagena. But you're no stranger to Colombia. You come here two or three times a year, right?
Yeah. I'm here a few times a year. And I've been to the Amazon, to Ciudad Perdida, everything. So the 4:30 a.m. Toto Express pickup from Cartagena wasn't that bad.
You're used to it. And also, it's all in the spirit of adventure, which is often so lacking in today's travel with internet and smartphones and whatever. Anyway, so listen, I apologize. We're here in my main room, and if there are any sounds in the background, it's the ubiquitous motorcycles used here in Mompos, since everyone seems to have them. But anyway, Nicholas has been traveling, for a long time. He works for many publications. I hope that he'll talk to us about some of them. But, if you're talking to travelers coming to Colombia, or potential travelers coming to Colombia,
Let's discuss the security situation. What would you say to them vis-a-vis security in Colombia?
For me, I've never had any sort of security issues in Colombia whatsoever. I personally find other South American countries far more dangerous, far less secure. I mean, even Peru, where I spend quite a bit of my time, is much more dangerous than here, I would say. I mean, in just the perception is completely changed in the U.S., I think, even. I think Venezuela is far more scary sounding than Colombia these days.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Venezuela is in a terrible situation. I'm not going to talk about the politics. We have a political spokesperson here who routinely comes up and bashes Venezuela for us here on Colombia Calling. But I don't want to get you in any trouble because you mentioned Peru, and of course you're married to a Peruvian from there in Lima. What drew you to Peru? Because that's where you really sort of went to live, no?
Yeah, well, I mean, at first I was kind of just traveling and writing, kind of living a nomadic life for a while, and then I made it to Peru, and I got a job writing a guidebook at the time, and while there, I was lucky to just be there kind of when the culinary scene really began to take off, and I guess it was just kind of dumb luck.
And you on the back of that, you wrote the guidebook and you wrote written articles. And is that where the New World Review came from?
Yeah, sort of. The New World Review kind of started a few years ago. Just I kind of needed an outlet to kind of write about all of the things I wanted to write about that I didn't really have an option in the magazines and newspapers I was writing. I mean, I write for the New York Times and things about Colombia and Peru, but it's very limited on what I can actually write about, especially in terms of gastronomy. There's so many very specific things happening in South America right now that there's really no outlet for in English.
Well, it's true. I mean, it's a constant problem that we all have is getting those articles, which are obviously, of course, timely, newsworthy, interesting, but you know the outlets don't want them. I mean,
right.
So you created your own portal, and I mean, do you have a massive follower base on that?
I wouldn't say I have a massive follower base, but I have a very niche, very dedicated follower base. Oh. And I mean, it's a lot of insiders, a lot of chefs from around the continent, and anyone related in culinary things follow me. But as far as in terms of mass market, no, it doesn't exist.
But it's a niche thing. And you know, Peruvian cuisine in the last, let's say, 10, 15 years has really become world renowned. I mean, through the ceviche, various chefs, Gaston, I believe.
Yeah, Gaston. Okay.
And he's opened one up in the restaurant in Bogota. And of course, but, you know, can Colombian cuisine ever reach those heights?
Yes and no. I think Peru's a little more advanced in terms of just the cultural makeup of just how food has developed there and how the country has been just closed off region by region for so many years. I mean, I guess that's kind of the same way as Colombia, but I think Colombia doesn't have the tradition of food that Peru has, but in terms of the biodiversity and the number of products, I would say it's very similar, and it has an enormous potential.
That's fantastic to hear. Now, you were recently at the sort of awards dinner. You'll have to specify exactly what they were, but the awards dinner for the top 10 restaurants or the top 100 restaurants in Latin America.
Yeah, that was the Latin America's 50 Best contest. It's part of the world's 50 Best restaurant list, but now they're kind of doing a region by region list. So there's Latin America, Asia, and I guess they're going to do Europe. And
that was held in Lima.
That was in Lima in early September.
You were right at home. And how did you find them? I mean, the top 10, how did you find them? What is your opinion of the top 10 that they elected?
The top 10, I think, were fairly accurate for the most part. I mean, I personally would see some restaurants maybe go up or down a spot, but in general, I think it was accurate. Astro y Gaston in Lima was number one, Dom in Sao Paulo number two, Pujol in Mexico City, number 3, and Central, number 4, and Central's from Lima. I think any of those four could really have been the top one.
Uh-huh. Okay, and what sort of food do these restaurants focus on?
It's high-end gastronomy. I mean, these are restaurants that could compete. They would have Michelin stars very easily if...
Okay.
If the Michelin Guide came to South
America. Michelin Guide came to. Not the travel guide, which, I'm the author of,
right.
Because it came. But it's interesting you say that, and it's interesting, you know, there seems to be a slight sort of renaissance in South American cooking. Of course, I don't really believe it's a renaissance. It was always there. It's just been a sort of a refining of it all.
Yeah, I mean, it's just high-end restaurants in South America are getting much better very quickly, and I mean, it's just the amount of diversity in terms of products here. I mean, there's no other place on earth with this much potential.
It's true. Well, this is a very exciting times for restaurateurs and stuff, but I mean, okay, so we're sitting here in Colombia, you're here in Mompox, and the food is we really lack restaurants here. I mean, we bring it right down to local level,
right?
I think the best thing you probably ate was a fish head soup yesterday.
Yeah, that was quite good. The cheese, too, was spectacular.
Oh, you like the cheese. All right. So the case of the capa, which is a traditional cheese here in Mompox, which is a sort of layered almost like mozzarella with a guava filling in the middle, if that's a very traditional one. And it makes both a savory and a sweet, you know, little filler. And so, yeah, well, I'm glad you like that. You know? So what else will you be doing here in Colombia in this trip?
This trip, I was in Leticia just for a few days. It was just kind of a transit point from Sao Paulo. And I made a stop in Bogota. I ate at a few nice restaurants there. And then I'm here in Mompox and heading to Cartagena before heading home.
I mean, you do spend a lot of time in the air, on the road.
I do, yeah. Sometimes it's too much at once, but I guess sometimes it's just how it works out.
But it's not a lifestyle that's... It's an incredible sacrifice. You eat well, you see places, you meet people.
Right. No, I'm not complaining, believe me.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. I'm glad to have you here on the show, Nicholas Gill. New World Review, what's the website?
NewWorldReview.com.
Very easy, and you can sign up for a newsletter that comes out periodically. Check it out. We'll be back in the second segment in just a couple of minutes. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're on the Overseas Radio Network.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. For the jet-setting beach bum, a problem eventually arises. Where do you go in the world for a new beach fix after your travels have taken you to the usual sandy spots around the world? Well, that's an easy one. It's time to get experimental. Everyone and their brother has hit the tropical white sand beaches, encircled with swaying palm trees and turquoise water nibbling at the shore. Are you ready for one with a twist on the theme? Check out the resort complex San Alfonso del Mar in Algarabo, Chile, for the world's largest swimming pool. This one should definitely be added to your bucket travels list. What do you do when you are a world-renowned resort located smack dab on the Pacific coast in Chile? Normally, whoop for joy that you can charge top dollar for the proximity to the ocean. But this particular stretch of ocean offers 63-degree year-round temperatures, dangerous waves, and rip currents. Ouch. Plunging nightly rates. Until some brainiac figured it would be a good idea to build the world's largest swimming pool mere feet from the ocean. Turns out, it was a good idea. This massive saltwater swimming pool remains a constant 79 degrees. No tides, sharks, or stingrays to ruin the day either. How big is big? Try half a mile long and hold 66 million gallons of water. It looks more like a lake. Add in a white sand perimeter, palm trees, and docks for sailors to ply their hobby. You heard correctly, sailing in the pool. And if you get a wild urge to experience Mother Nature's version of water, it's only a few steps to the real deal. We're betting you'll be back in the pool before long. How's that for a jolt to your usual beach travels? For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall, on the Overseas Radio Network. We're here with Nicholas Gill, New York travel writer, food writer of the New World Review, newworldreview.com. Look it up. Sign up for his updates and so on. But we're here. He's here in Mompos. I think he likes the cheese. But we're talking about mainly about restaurants in Colombia. We're going to talk about Colombian food a bit. And, you know, I'm so tired of reading blogs about, you know, travel blogs, people putting out saying, oh, the variety of fruit, you know, that's great. We know there's fantastic fruit in Colombia. There's fantastic fruit in most Latin American countries. And, yes, a great deal of it does not have translations into English. But we want to talk about the culinary experience. And so Nick, last week, or in early September, was in Lima. He's married to a Peruvian. But he was in Lima for the sort of the top 50 restaurants in Latin America. And he was mentioning some, Mexico, Sao Paulo, Lima. But in that list of top 50, which restaurants from Colombia were there on that in that group?
I forget exactly how many were there. I want to say 4, maybe 5. There was El Cielo from Bogota and Medellin. The Criterion from Bogota. Andres Carne de Res from Bogota. And that may have been it. Maybe
I'm wrong.
Oh, Harry Sasson in Bogota also. So yeah, so I guess everything was from Bogota.
So we had. Excuse me, we'll just let that motorcycle pass. So he needs to clean his muffler. That would be great. But there he goes. So now we can get back to it. Many apologies to you, those of you out there, but that such is life in the tropics. Harry Sasson in Bogota I went to. I wrote a blog about it, but not about that, because I wrote a blog about it because I was there at my anniversary dinner, second anniversary dinner, and the food was very good, but I didn't think it would rank alongside a top 50. I mean, you've eaten there.
No, I haven't
you
eaten
haven't.
There, actually, but there were a lot of restaurants in that list that seemed to not fit. It's the top 10 seemed good to me, but then the other 40, it was like they were picking out of a hat to some extent. Some restaurants were a big surprise that didn't make it, I thought. Leonora Espinosa's in Bogota, the Leo Cochina y Cava, and she has another restaurant too. And
which is in the Bogo Hotel,
yeah,
I think.
Right, in the BOG Hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she's brilliant. I was surprised she wasn't on that list. And places like Andres Carne de Res were. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Andres Carne de Res, but top 50 best in it's a steakhouse.
Yeah, I find it difficult to believe. I mean, steakhouses are steakhouses. You get good ones and you get bad ones.
I mean, it's a wonderful one, and I love it, but we're talking about the best restaurants on a continent, and I think that's pushing it a little bit.
Yes, it's true. It's an interesting thing. I took a friend from Seattle to Andres Carne de Res, but in the one in Bogota, not the one in Chía, which is outside of town, which is the original, and you know, it's all about a party, really.
Right.
You're going with friends. You're going to down too many mojitos in the gourds, you know.
Yeah.
I usually end up forgetting most of the evening and then paying a huge bill, but it's not what I would call, you know, haute cuisine. It's not what I call, and he likened it. And honestly, I think Andres Jaramillo, you know, the owner of Andres Carne de Res, the brains behind it, if he hears me say this, he'd probably chop off my head. But my friend from Seattle likened it to Senor Frogs. I think it's better than Senor Frogs.
Yeah, come on. That's setting the bar low. I mean, it's a really nice atmosphere and everything. I mean, there was another steakhouse in Buenos Aires on the list, too, but La Cabrera, but it's just on this list. I don't think it belongs alongside what should be Michelin star restaurants.
Now, I have to ask you, you mentioned Leonor Espinosa, who I've actually eaten in her restaurant, the one, the Leo Cocina y Cava, which
yeah,
is...
Yeah, I think it's spectacular.
It is excellent. It's just in the Centro Internacional. It's on a road, in fact, incidentally, called the Mompos, in downtown Bogota. So just, you know, it's just before you get to the Museo Nacional.
Right.
I was taken there my first year in 2007 to Colombia, and it was excellent. I mean, truly excellent. She was really exploring what Colombia had on offer.
Right, right. And I think that's what's exciting in Latin America right now. I mean, there's so much potential and so many products to just explore and play with that, I mean, that's what's exciting for me. And I mean, Andres Carne de Res, I love it, but is the beef even from Colombia? I mean, it's probably from Argentina.
I think you can specify either Argentine or Colombian, and it comes with a little flag in it which denominates which ones are coming through. And I have to say, while I've had excellent Colombian steak, it doesn't really hold a torch alongside the Argentine steak.
Right.
And again, it's just going to get me all sorts of negative feedback, but you know, you have to tell the truth.
But seriously, we love Andres Carne de Res. It's just the problem is it's on this list, which is a little bit odd.
So you think the list was somewhat diluted and maybe doing favors? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think just the way it was set up was a little bit odd. I mean, there was a chairman in Buenos Aires, one in, I forget, like Venezuela or... No, Sao Paulo, and then one in Mexico City, so... But then voters coming from around, but it's just the way that it was set up, it didn't, whatever happened didn't work out right. I mean, there were 15 restaurants from Argentina, which is a lot.
I find that quite shocking, you know?
Right.
I mean, Argentina is great food. Yeah. It's great food, but it's either, I mean, okay, forgive me if I'm wrong, a lot of Italian food, given the descent of many of Argentines, and a lot of steak.
Right.
But there's got to be something else.
I mean, there are something. I mean, number 49 on the list is one of my favorite restaurants, actually, in the Hernan Giapponi in the Fiera Hotel in Buenos Aires. It's phenomenal, and it's not just beef.
Okay.
That should have been in the top 20 for me, but yet there was La Cabrera Steakhouse in Argentina, like at 16 or whatever.
Now, I always try and make this less Bogota-centric, but we always end up being drawn back to Bogota because Colombia is so centralized.
Yeah.
It's so, everything happens there. You know, I try and spend as much time as I can here in Mompos, but to work, to earn, I have to go back to Bogota.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, most of my interviews are held there. But listen, you know, you've traveled all around Colombia. You know all of the cities, but there must be other restaurants that you can name in Cartagena or Medellin.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, in Medellin, Bon Noir, this restaurant, it's kind of like Caribbean, New Orleans, Cajun, Colombian. It's amazing, I think. And they have, like, brunch and live jazz. It's completely just off the wall and beautiful. It's in the, I think, the Medellin's Museum of Art.
Museum
of Modern Art. Yeah, it's amazing. That's
so on the other side of the river, you know, from like the Centro and the Parque Barrio, where the Modern Art Museum is, or
well, the Modern Art Museum moved.
So I'm not up to date.
Okay, I mean, like a few years ago, so it's fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an amazing restaurant. I think that wasn't on the list, by the way.
Okay.
What else? In Cartagena, there's so many great restaurants now. I mean, some of them are kind of overpriced and touristy, but I mean, there's some quality there. La Cevicheria or Pescateria? I can't remember.
There's a cevicheria. I am aware of a cevicheria there.
Right by the Santa Clara. What's the name of that?
I think it's a cevicheria. The Peruvian one.
No.
Oh.
It's Colombian, but it's phenomenal. It's either La Pescateria or La Cevicheria.
Okay.
But sidewalk chairs,
yeah,
beautiful, yeah.
Well, Cartagena, I mean, Cartagena should have world-class restaurants.
Right.
It has. It's been the eternal city of Colombian tourism. I mean, 30 years of tourism, and now incredibly sophisticated, as my parents said when they came out and visited, and I had my wedding there, and because it was just easier for me to organize everything there and just leave people to just sort of roam the streets and eat well and enjoy themselves in the contained area. But I mean, there are some there are some very poor places, just like they say, sapping on the tourism in Cartagena. But an age-old favorite for us is always La Vitrola, and it's continually written up.
Of course. I don't think that wasn't on the list either. But well, that might have been pushing. It's not really even Colombian.
Well, it's not Colombian. Yeah. It's just kind of Cuban sort of thing, isn't it? And a mixture of other things. But it's just the ambience,
right?
And the light music.
Beautiful place, could fit in anywhere.
This is true. Isn't it owned by a New Yorker as well?
I'm not sure. Enamored with
Cuba and, but I don't know. I always have to sort of struggle and sort of edge my way in. I never remember to make a booking because if you are going to La Vitrola, make a booking.
Right.
You know, it's what happened. Okay, we're okay. And so you're saying Medellin. Have you had any time down there in Cali?
Not in a long time. I'd really like to go. I've heard Cali's developed quite a bit probably in the last 5 years.
It's still in its chaotic bliss, but it's always getting better. Cali, it was the first city I got to know in Colombia, and way back in the day, and I care not to share with you this, but it's getting better. But if you're in Cali, you've got a greater outlet to the Pacific region,
right, okay.
And of course the food there.
Yeah,
but we were talking earlier, and you've been to a Pacific food restaurant in Bogota.
Right. There's a guy named Ray Guerrero. He's from Pacific Coast of Colombia. He got in touch with me maybe 4 or 5 months ago about that he's trying to rescue all of these recipes from the Pacific Coast of Colombia, which I knew absolutely nothing about the food there. And he opened a restaurant in Bogota. It's called Ray Guerrero Pescaderia Gourmet. It's in El Lago.
So Calle 77 with about 14.
I think so, yeah. 14, yeah, that sounds
there.
About right. And, yeah, it's just really nice, fresh food. I mean, lots of kind of rice dishes and plantains and all of these odd mollusks from, you know, the Pacific Coast that you don't ever see in any restaurants in Bogota, but they're wonderful.
Well, it's good to hear. It's good to hear that there is like a... So an evolution of the cuisine, of the cooking, that can enable the other sort of lesser known regions of Colombia sort of, let's say, surge forth, you know, they pick themselves up and get known for something else, something more positive like cooking. But anyway, we're here, we're talking with Nicholas Gill of the New World Review, travel writer, food writer, known all over the world. Anyway, well, don't go away. We'll be talking to him a little bit longer in the last segment of this show. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling on the Overseas Radio Network.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
You've decided that you want to move overseas for that quality of life experience you've always dreamed of. But you don't want to give up the best of back home. We agree. Things like high-speed internet, safe neighborhoods where you can stroll along a shaded sidewalk, a place where you know your neighbors and you have friends close by. These are important. Grand Pacifica Beach and Golf Resort gives you the best comforts of back home paired with the exceptional lifestyle only available south of the border. Imagine strolling along over 3 miles of secluded beach, playing a round of golf along the ocean, surfing a world-class break all to yourself, enjoying a fine meal on your balcony and toasting to another spectacular sunset. All this and more can be yours only an hour from Managua. Complete home and lot packages start under $100,000, and a nice home on the golf course is yours for the mid-twos. Come visit for a weekend and enjoy our oceanside golf course. Ride horseback on the beach, meet your future neighbors, and make some new friends. Grand Pacifica may be a place you'd like to call home. For more information, email mike@mikesgringolife.com. That's mike@mikesgringolife.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.JustLanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's JustLanded.com.
sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
Va subiendo la corriente con chinchorro y atarraya.
This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, your host. We're here in the final segment of the show today. We're here with Nicholas Gill, originally from Ohio, he told me earlier in the day. He's here in Mompox, Colombia with me. He's staying at the Casa Maria, my little place. And but he's been traveling around. He's been in Leticia, up in Cartagena. He comes to Colombia a couple of times a year. He was just in Peru at the sort of awards for the 50 best restaurants. So we've been principally talking about food. But, this guy travels. He sees everything. He's observant. And again, published in the New York Times and other... We're talking high editorial quality. So it's a great pleasure to have him here with us. And I just want to say, a few years ago, I don't even remember the year, a few years ago, you wrote a piece on...
I think last year, actually.
Was it last year? Okay, last year, let's say. So he wrote a piece on Getsemani, which is the sort of, let's say, the original slave area of Cartagena, which was a more downhill area. When San Diego, where all the luxury boutique hotels are located, was flourishing and still growing, Getsemani was the sort of the haunt for all the backpackers. So it all kind of looked a bit dirty, a bit scruffy, and had the reputation of let's just completely stereotype and say people looking for cocaine and maybe cheap women, and of course you had the you were at risk perhaps of being pickpocketed or being stood up or whatever. Cartagena and Getsemani for me is now the most vibrant section, especially around the Plaza de la Trinidad. But part of the reason in the boom, and this is not just to beef up your story or to blow your trumpet here, Nick, is you wrote an excellent piece for the New York Times, just declaring this. And what struck you about Getsemani that you need to write for the New York Times about this?
Right. Well, I guess I was in Getsemani maybe the first time I was in Cartagena or even Colombia. That was the very first place I ever stayed in South America. Even I guess I was in some very dingy hostel on Calle Media Luna. That was probably, $3 or $4 a night. This was, 10 years ago. It was nothing interesting at all. It was just a convenient spot to walk into the old city. And then last year, when I went back to get Getsemani, I noticed all of these interesting little cafes and restaurants and art galleries opening, and even like boutique hotels, and it was a complete change from what it used to be. I mean, it's still a little seedy in parts, but it's so much more charming. And I mean, with the old city being kind of overrun by cruise passengers and chain, there's a Hard Rock cafes and whatever now. It's just a nice breath of fresh air. There's no chains of any sort whatsoever in Getsemani. Everything's a small, independent, little family-owned or whatever shop.
It's like you say, it's refreshing. It sort of seems to be a melting pot of creativity in Getsemani. And I guess when I went first time all those years ago, I actually was advised not to step foot in there. And yeah, I remember the places were like $4 a night, and you probably didn't have a window in your room. Possibly not even a fan. You may have left with bed bugs. but now, as I say, there are some really fashionable places.
Oh, yeah. Like Casa Lola is... Casa Lola.
Yeah, Casa Lola.
Yeah, that's
right.
It's beautiful. And then... Casa Carnaval.
Carnaval.
Yeah, beautiful boutique hotels, as nice as anything you'll find in the old city.
What I love about Casa Carnaval is it opened up on that sort of, I think it's the road called San Andres or something like that, which is sort of a block back from the Parque del Bicentenario. And it's only like a block and a half up on the same street as the first hostel in Colombia, the Casa Viena.
Oh, okay,
which is the first hostel opened by an Austrian guy who's now sold it on to his staff. but it was the reference point backpacking.
If you were catching a boat to Panama, which on my first trip to Colombia, I came from Panama on a yacht, and that was the place where you found out which captain had spaces and when he was going.
And what a trip. It's just hilarious. So you've got to this place where they've been struggling, and then they established themselves, Casa Viena.
Yeah.
And they established themselves, and now they're there, and now, a block and a half towards the old city from where they're located is this, ultra boutique. I mean, wonderful.
Yeah.
Casa Carnaval. And I think it's only going to keep going, but I kind of hope that it maintains its spirit. I kind of hope that Hegemony maintains a sort of independence from the cruise ships and the chains, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think it will. I mean, it's going to develop more. There's going to be more restaurants and cafes and whatever. It's inevitable. But I think just that it's because it's not in the old city and that the cruise ships aren't right there, it's not going to get crazy. There's not going to be a McDonald's on every corner or a Starbucks. I mean, I've heard Four Seasons has been snooping around.
Really?
I don't, yeah. There's some amazing properties still left there, but who knows? I don't think it's going to really lose its character. I mean, it won't be as rough, maybe, but I think it will still be all right.
But part of the enjoyment is that it most of Hegemony belongs to the Hegemenses, the people from there, the traditional Cartagenero families.
Right.
And that's what adds that mix. Now in the San Diego and in the Central, I don't believe there are too many Colombians who own
very
the buildings.
Few.
You know,
it's, yeah, yeah, very yeah. few.
And so therefore it's almost like, I mean, okay, it's beautiful. I do enjoy going there, don't get me wrong, but it almost feels like it's just set up for tourism. There's no, let's say, economic reaction to the locals. Eh?
Right, right.
They come in, they work, and they leave at night.
Right.
But they go back to Hegemony and have a better time.
Yeah.
Now, we need to quickly mention something in Hegemony. If you're planning to go, and even if you stay in San Diego, which, of course, on the outset is let's say more recommended in guidebooks and more recommended on like websites and whatever because of perceived security and so on. But if you're going to Hegemony, you have to go to the Cafe Havana or Bar Havana or whatever it's called. There on the
Cafe Havana
on the Calle Media Luna. That's the place for you listeners. For those of you who've seen the news and looked at the newspapers and saw Hillary Clinton shaking her booty, that's where she danced.
That was right after I wrote that article.
Oh, right. Well, so maybe that
had some influence.
You paved the way for Hillary to get down and dirty in Hegemony in Bar Havana. Of course, it's Cuban, but it's so much fun. You know, it's like from Wednesday night onwards, I believe, it's open.
Yeah, it's not every night.
Anyway, so we've talked about this, and we were touching on things, and you actually mentioned Starbucks, and I want to draw you back. I mean, I'm going to draw you back to Starbucks on that one because we've got Juan Valdez here, and we've got Oma,
mm-hmm.
Oma, which means grandmother in German, and it was actually opened by a German who was of Nazi sympathies back in the day here in Colombia. So we don't want to talk about that much more. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out there. But Starbucks announced, and they had a big press conference recently, they're coming to Colombia.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I mean, Starbucks is going to come anywhere they can. They opened in Cusco, right on the main plaza. I mean, if people are going to go there, they're going to open. So I don't know. I mean,
yeah. I don't necessarily, and now this is where I'm going to get bashed again.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing. I can only hope they're going to buy Colombian product.
Mm-hmm.
And I also hope that it's competition.
Right.
Which would allow Juan Valdez and Oma to up their game.
Yeah.
I mean, competition is good at the end. And unless it saturates the market, but it's good.
Right. I mean, they do use, I think, they do have farms and or buy from Colombian farms, I believe, Starbucks, and very high end. I don't know. I mean, it's always better to go to an independent coffee shop, in my opinion, but sometimes what are you going to do?
But you know the story behind Starbucks is all those years ago, Starbucks offered a certain percentage to the Colombian Federation of Coffee Growers so that they could be provided with like the Colombian bean at all times. And the Colombian Federation of Coffee Growers said no. It kind of seems like a dumb move now, but again, maybe that allows them their independence.
Right.
Maybe, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I don't know. If people want to go to a Starbucks in Cusco, so be it. If they want, I've seen the one in Lima. I have not been in it, and I know you know where the usual suspects, but they'll open up in Bogota and Medellin. I just kind of think you're going to get homesick, sort of American language students going there.
And, right.
I don't know how many more you're going to get.
Yeah. I don't know. I think a lot of wealthy Colombians that have lived in the States or whatever, they'll probably end up there. In the same sphere, there's a Juan Valdez in New York. So.
Yes, it's true. And I've seen that there, and I've not had a coffee there. I did have a coffee at the one in Aruba, but that's because I couldn't get a good coffee. But aside from that, I don't know, it's just a tough call on that. And it's the way that Colombia is going with all of these free trade agreements and trying to open up everything to foreign business and investment. It was only inevitable ever. But anyway, so yeah, we've done the Starbucks piece. We don't need to talk anymore about that. Now, Nick, we've talked about a little bit about your travel. We've talked about food. We've talked about restaurants. But we need to go back a little bit here and just say, listen, what region of Colombia do you really need to visit or do you want to revisit?
That's tough. I would really like to go back to Ciudad Perdida.
Uh-huh.
I was there maybe, 10 years ago, 8-9 years ago, and immediately after the trip, my camera was stolen in Bogota on the Transmilenio. All of my photos from that hike are missing. I just have in my head that these were the most amazing photos I have ever taken, and I've been pitching it to go back for whatever magazine, but hopefully sometime soon I'll figure it out and get back.
But it's one of the most like now sought after hikes up at this end of South America.
But it's amazing. It's
amazing.
It's incredible the things you see on that hike.
But I find more than the final aspects. It's the whole hike itself, crossing the rivers.
I mean, the actual ruins they're beautiful, but they're not that special.
No.
I mean,
but it's also special in that it's a living ruin. I mean, they're still inhabited. It's still, the people still consider it incredibly sacred. They live roundabouts. There's their coca plantations and the Kogi, Tairona, Caribe people. I don't know how ever to specify it. So, but it is, it's phenomenal. But now I've seen the lines. I've seen the lines queuing up to start the hike.
Oh,
it's
really?
Huge.
Are there that many people going?
It's that many people, and now you can't get in. It used to be that you would turn up. I guess I did it in 2001 or something.
Right, that's probably
2002.
I did it a little later.
You could just queue up, and they'd get you on the next day. Now, you've got to book in advance.
At least they're limiting the number of people, though. I mean, when I went, there was a group of 8, and we were the only people I saw the entire week. But if it becomes like, the Inca Trail where there's thousands at a time and you're just kind of hiking in a line for 4 days, then that could be scary.
Well,
it would lose its charm.
It will lose its charm a little bit. But I mean, it's inevitable because it's becoming one of those things. I mean, I've hiked the Inca Trail 4 or 5 times because I've done it as a guide. And the last time I did it, I think I was stuck behind some gentleman in spandex the whole way. And it really did. I've studied all of this stuff, and I love it, and I love doing the trek. And for me to go back and do the Sierra Perdida, someone's going to have to guarantee me that there are very few people on it.
And right.
It's just very special.
It is. Yeah. There were a lot of people around at that time. I don't know if I have the same effect on me.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. Anyway, it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Nick. This is Nicholas Gill here we're interviewing. He's the author of many articles. Look him up. You can Google his name, Nicholas Gill, spelled as it sounds. Do you have a website that you can check out?
Nicholas-Gill.com.
Very easy. That's G-I-L-L. and also thenewworldreview.com. That's all about food in the New World. And you'll see it. You'll see stuff on the New York Times. You'll see stuff almost everywhere. It's prolific. And what else can I say? Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Richard.
You're very welcome. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We've been speaking to Nicholas Gill. Thank you.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.